don't have a guest today. I am sharing some selections from The Transfer Agreement and The Boycott Fever, 1933 by Udo Valendi. This booklet is available for $7 from the Barnes Review. The boycott measures, fighting slogans, situation reports, long-term setting of targets on the part of predominantly American Jewish quarters, which Edwin Black describes in his book, are making one thing quite clear. Due to the chaotic political situation prevailing in Germany at the time, and because of her almost total isolation in terms of foreign affairs imposed by the Versailles war powers, Adolf Hitler was hardly in a position throughout 1933 to pursue a policy of expansion. Until the death of Reich's President Paul von Hindenburg in August 1934, he was not even the supreme commander of the armed forces. To antagonize the foreign press by German politics or to cause prejudice with other countries in their economic relations with Germany was therefore the very, very last thing Hitler wanted. The victors and co-victors of Versailles, and these included a number of private financial, economic, and journalistic associations, which often surpassed the diplomacy of their respective countries in dexterity and represented the pressure of public opinion, were indeed using all necessary means of power in their hands to impose almost any condition on Germany. And of course he's referring to the Jews. The different governments seemed to be largely content with this situation, and with the exception of Poland, which aspired to exploit the change of power in Berlin for a military invasion into Germany to annex East Prussia, Silesia, and Pomerania, endeavored to maintain peace in Central Europe. In their assessment of the political situation in Germany, Hitler's downfall, rather than his conquest of the world, was generally expected, and this, they thought, was only a matter of time, of a few months at most. But under the protection of these governments, the said private pressure groups, with their worldwide ramifications, were responsible for the gradual escalation of a policy of confrontation of an international basis. One of the gang leaders of these pressure groups was Samuel Untermeyer, one of the most powerful and influential Jewish leaders in America, and a most successful attorney, government advisor, and president of the non-sectarian Anti-Nazi League. From 1933 to 1939, Samuel Untermeyer devoted all of his time and energy to a worldwide boycott of German goods, insisting on rigorous and immediate implementation wherever and however this could be done. This he did right after Hitler had seized power with no mandate from the German Jews to do so. Stephen Weiss, founder and president of the American Jewish Congress, made similar efforts to get this boycott going, but he preferred to have it coordinated with government measures and full powers being given to him by a board of international Jewry operating on a worldwide basis. As a platform for his agitation, he preferred the preparative World Jewish Conferences convening in Geneva, Switzerland, at which he appealed to all those who have joined the fight for freedom and justice for all races, religions, and peoples to carry out this boycott with all their energy. But let me first quote a number of different stages of these endeavors, and this is from E. Black's book. And I quote, on March 12th, the American Jewish Congress leadership convened a three-hour session and voted to commence a national program, and this is 1933, a national program of highly visible protests, marches, and demonstrations. The focal point of the protest would be a giant anti-Nazi rally, March 27th at Madison Square Garden. History thus records that in an era distinguished by appeasement, oops, we got a break, we'll be right back. Stay tuned, be back in three.
If you would like to live your life free of sickness, pain, and fear, live your life with increased vitality, energy, and youthfulness, and experience your body healing itself from anything out of balance, concerning cardiovascular or diabetic circulation problems, then this might be the most important ad you'll ever hear. It is possible to acquire a 100% organic nutritional supplement for a healthy heart and circulation, which works. It is extremely effective and starts to work within days. For a long and healthy life, order today by calling 866-295-5305. 866-295-5305. A healthy heart is a happy heart. Order online at heartandbody.com. That's heartandbody.com.
There are many water filters to choose from, but there is only one system that is consistently customer rated 5 stars as the number one system for effective filtration of fluoride, radiation, drug residues, heavy metals, a wide range of radioisotopes, and more. Introducing the PureFect Ultra, the next generation water filter that also raises alkaline pH, improves antioxidant potential, and has advanced anti-radiation technology. All while using no electricity. Sold worldwide, it provides virtually instant clean water on demand. It is not made in China, and the shipping is free to all 50 states. Buy your PureFect Ultra today by visiting PureFectFilters.com or call 888-891-4821. Again, that's 888-891-4821 or visit PureFectFilters.com.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Sharing some selections from the booklet, the transfer agreement and the Boycott Fever, 1933 by Udo Valendi. This booklet is available from the Barnes Review, and this is from E. Black's book. And I quote, when I'm talking about the Jewish war veterans, I'm talking about Jews living in America who fought in World War I against Germany. Okay, and I quote. History thus records that in an era distinguished by appeasement, the Jewish war veterans were the very first anywhere in the world to declare openly their organized resistance to the Nazi regime. They had fought Germany once and would fight again, unquote. Is that not remarkable? A veterans protest march organized by the JWV, that's the Jewish War Veterans, on March 23, 1933, in which the vice president of the AJC, W.W. Cohn, participated as a parade marshal, unfolded under the banners and placards declaring economic war on Germany. The American Federation of Labor pledged its 3 million members to fight Nazism here and in Germany. British Unionist and Labor Party leaders offered to speak for this boycott movement directed against Germany, while Hitler, in his Reichstag speech of March 23rd, was stressing the necessity of good relationships with foreign countries, and his program concerning foreign politics had even been approved by the Social Democrats. Now, keep in mind, he took office on January 30th, 1933, and by March 23rd, 1933, the veterans were dozens of organizations were promoting boycott against Germany. On March 20, let's see, the Social Democrat said this, and I quote, March 24th, Reich leaders realized that boycott agitation was accelerating, especially in Great Britain. Placards proclaiming boycott German goods spread infectiously throughout London and were now in the windows of the most exclusive West End shops. Automobiles bannering boycott placards slowly cruised through the retail districts alerting shoppers. Everywhere, store signs warned German salesmen not to enter. British Catholics had been urged by the Archbishop of Liverpool to join the protest. London's Daily Herald carried an interview with a prominent Jewish leader who admitted, "The Jewish leaders are hanging back, but the Jewish people are forcing its leaders on. Already, the boycott has damaged hundreds of thousands of pounds worth of German trade." 55,000 were gathered on March 27, 1933, in and around Madison Square Garden. Supportive rallies were at that moment waiting in Chicago, Washington, San Francisco, Houston, and seven other American cities. At each supportive rally, thousands huddled around loudspeakers waiting for the garden event, which would be broadcast live via radio relay to 200 additional cities across the country. At least 1 million Jews were participating nationwide. Perhaps another million Americans of non-Jewish heritage stood with them. Turning to Jewish leaders in Germany and their advocates in America, Wise disqualified their pleas for an end to the protest as panic and terror from those who had failed to fight Nazism before the NSDAP came to power. He vowed that anti-Hitler protests would escalate, even if Sado ameliorations appeared. Even if life and human rights are to be safeguarded, there must not be a substitution of the status of serfdom for violence. Such substitution will not satisfy us. The throng interrupted with cheers of encouragement, nor satisfy the aroused conscience of mankind. The crowd offered their own punctuation as Wise declared, and I quote, "Every form of economic discrimination is a form of violence. Every racial exclusion is violence. To say that there will be no pogroms is not enough. A dry and bloodless economic pogrom remains violence. Remains violent and forceful." Interesting. Bishop McConnell added that anti-Nazi rallies and protest actions must continue, even if persecutions in Germany temporarily ceased until the Nazis were out of power. Now, Bishop McConnell, let's see, who is that guy? Let me just flip back here and see. Bishop Francis T. McConnell. He was leading the Christian protest at Madison Square Garden. Wonderful. Just wonderful. Get the Christians involved, the same as the Christians are currently involved in decimating Palestine. Excuse me. Let me get a drink here. One reason was that the Madison Square denunciations were heard throughout Germany. De Führer and the NSDAP were termed criminals and barbarians. Germany was accused of rampant tortures and atrocities. As the Nazis saw it, Jewish propaganda was again disabling Germany before she could achieve success, as in World War I. Mass meetings throughout Poland, coordinated to the Congress's rally, had voted to expand the Vilna boycott to all of Poland. The three most important Warsaw Jewish commercial organizations, the Central Association of Merchants, the Central Association of Small Tradesmen, and the Central Association of Jewish Artisans, passed binding resolutions to use the most radical means of defense by boycotting German imports. Now, 10% of the Polish population included 10% Jews, and most of them lived in Warsaw. They were pretty much in charge of the government in Poland at that time. In London, almost all Jewish shops in the Whitechapel district were displaying placards denying entry to German salesmen and affirming the anti-Nazi boycott. Teenagers patrolled the streets distributing handbills asking shoppers to boycott German goods. Pickets were thrown around East Coast stores carrying German goods, and a steady publicity program was being well received by the U.S. media. So we see here a lot of herd mentality, and we see that the media had complete control and of promoting this horrible, horrible situation. This is amazing. To counteract these increasing boycott measures intensified by atrocity propaganda reports, Hitler insisted that a boycott of Jewish stores be organized by the NSDAP for one day, April 1st, 1933, as he felt that otherwise protests might break out, which would be difficult to curb. But this one day of boycott was only ammunition for further boycott measures against Germany, as well as for further spiteful and unilateral comments on German terrorism. Now, keep in mind, people, he'd only been in since January 30th, 1933. All of international Jewry were going against him, getting all of these other countries to go against him. And here they are trying to fight for self-determination, trying to get back to work, trying to focus on getting and taking care of Germans in Germany, and they had all of this opposition. The German leadership was not only concerned about economic setbacks, but also about the worldwide public feeling favoring military intervention against Germany. Plans for democratic operations of this kind were seriously considered, above all in Poland and even in Czechoslovakia. When Reichsbank President Hjalmar Schacht arrived in the United States on a goodwill tour in early May 1933 to improve German-American relations, he found himself surrounded by anti-Hitler tumult. On May 10th, hundreds of thousands of demonstrators had assembled to condemn the Reich. I mean, this is amazing. You know, we don't gather together to oppose things as we used to, but the newspaper had the media had the capacity to get all of these people, hundreds of thousands of demonstrators, to condemn the Reich. And now they've got us also brainwashed that we don't do that anymore. We just sit back and watch reality TV or whatever. Hjalmar Schacht then realized that the newspapers would continue to churn out anti-German news that would spread the boycott of German goods even further without any possibility of diplomatic intervention on his part. The message was clear. The anti-Nazi boycott was killing Germany's economy. Schacht went home with empty hands. From January to April 1933, the Reich's exports had dropped by 10%. Meanwhile, Germany's border crisis grew hour by hour. Poland's pro-invasion military hawks found widespread support among a population inflamed by Jewish boycott committees. Events were culminating. The destruction of Hitler's tenuous regime from without or within loomed as the crisis of the hour in Berlin. German officials and corporate leaders had been dispatched to the cities of Europe and America to try to blunt the attack. These efforts were unsuccessful. Government clarifications, token protective decrees, and threats of unrestrained retaliation against German Jews were also unsuccessful. Okay, there was one gentleman, a Zionist by the name of Haim Arlo Soroff, and it says, as a Zionist, he emphatically intervened in favor of understanding with the National Socialists, certainly in the first place in order to help his people. He paid for his engagement with his life. As early as June 1933, he was assassinated north of Haifa by revisionists. Okay? So they wanted this influential Zionist silenced, so they killed him. And the Jews killed him. Okay? Alrighty, we will be right back in 3 minutes. We're going to a break. Stay tuned.
Are you tormented with anxiety, depression, or other chronic symptoms of less than perfect health? In 2010, a few people got to participate in a groundbreaking discovery. Dr. Carolyn Dean, world-renowned authority on natural health, has recently patented a technology that is straight out of science fiction. And she invited me to try this product called RNA Drops. And within 12 hours of taking RNA Drops, I could feel an amazing sense of bliss. And since then, I've watched my troubles with depression and other health issues vanish into freedom and happiness again. Listen to hours of testimonials and get your trial bottle of RNA Drops at www.rnafreebottle.com. That's www.rnafreebottle.com. Pay only shipping and handling and get your free trial bottle today at rnafreebottle.com.
Hey, meat eaters, the freeze-dried guy wants to know, does your emergency food supply meet the standards for survival? Then get the 144-day meat variety unit from the freeze-dried guy. Our meat units utilize only quality Mountain House freeze-dried cooked ground chicken and ground beef, the undisputed choice for great taste and highest nutrition. The freeze-dried guy's 144-day meat variety unit includes six number 10 cans of the very best freeze-dried animal protein for power you'll need when the going gets tough. Every Meat Eater's 144-day meat variety unit comes with a free medical kit and always free shipping to the lower 48. Need more than 144 days? See our one-year-plus Meat Eater's units at freezedryguy.com. And hey, the Freeze Dry Guy still has LRP rations, but they're going fast. Don't wait until tomorrow. Call now, 866-404-3663. That's 866-404-3663. Or go to freezedryguy.com and meet the standards for survival.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
A healthy heart starts with Extendovite. I've always believed that I had to have a strong defense to overcome the new superbugs of today. Extendovite, a 7-herb heart protection cocktail, not only helped me to overcome a massive heart attack, but it also has built up my natural immune defenses against colds and flus. Extendovite has so many benefits that we all should be taking Extendovite to build up our defenses for what superbugs might emerge yet. So start today, clean out the toxins, and be as healthy as you can be. To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit our website at heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Welcome back. This is Deanna, and I am sharing some selections from the booklet, The Transfer Agreement and the Boycott Fever, 1933, by Udo Valendi. And this book is available from the Barnes Review. Continuing, stimulated by continual press reports on German atrocities in peacetime, which Schacht had emphatically denied, the boycott protests spread to the large cities of almost every country and even as far as Argentina and Australia. While predominantly in Britain and the Netherlands, labor unionist and labor party leaders supported the boycott movement. As an aside, you know, most of the labor unions were run at that time by Jews. Okay, back to the text. The German fur, textile, and diamond trades were hit particularly hard. In the first quarter of 1933, Germany's vital surplus of export was less than half the 1932 figure. Demands were already being made in the States by John Foster Dulles to have German private and public assets seized in compensation for her debts, thus dissolving German international trade assets. When the Reich could no longer pay its obligations, Germany would be bankrupt. That moment had been technically postponed for years by rationing foreign exchange to only the most important transactions. But with the Reichsbank reserves hit so hard by both the boycott and the depression, there would soon be nothing left to ration. If exports fell too low, Germany as a nation would again be faced with starvation. It had happened just 14 years earlier. It was still fresh in many minds. In the winter of 1919, a besieged Germany was blockaded into submission, starved into defeat. to the Nazis, the anti-German boycott of 1933 was in many ways a reminiscent tactic. There were no enemy ships in the seaways, no hostile divisions at the bridgeheads, but as effective as any blockading frigate or infantryman was this boycott that blocked German goods being sold, blocked foreign exchange from being earned, and blocked the means of survival from entering Germany. How many months could Germany survive once the boycott became global, once commerce was rerouted around Germany? The boycotters adopted a slogan, and I quote, "Germany will crack this winter." Since the spring, both the Jewish war veterans in New York and the Polish boycott committees in Warsaw had talked of joining forces. On June 3rd, Lord Melchett and the British Trade Unions Congress took the initiative and issued formal invitations to the independent boycott committees of the world to assemble in London on June 25th to establish an international boycott council. Melchett titled the boycott convention the World Jewish Economic Conference. At about the same time, the World Economic Conference, convened by FDR, was underway in London, but it achieved just the opposite of what it set out to achieve, an economic collaboration of the parties to world trade to remedy the economic crises. A Reich cabinet meeting on June 23, 1933 reported, pessimistic as were the expectations with which the German delegation went to London, they were outdistanced by far. Germany found among all states an attitude that hardly could be worse. On Samuel Untermeyer's recommendation, the World Jewish Economic Conference was postponed to July 20th and relocated to Amsterdam. About 35 countries were to participate. For weeks, they had exchanged experiences, discussed successful boycott ideas, compiled long list of manufacturers and sellers seeking alternatives for German goods, discussed countermeasures against boycott breakers, and even founded a special boycott publication, the Jewish Economic Forum. The slogan, "Germany will crack this winter," was adopted by the delegates. Samuel Untermeyer's assessment of the situation, and I quote, he had taken pains to explain to conservative Anglo-Jewish leaders that a de facto popular international boycott already existed. In Poland, it is incredibly good. In Czechoslovakia, fantastically good. In France, in England, fair. In America, very good. Furious speeches and feisty determination to crack German economic staying power created an impressive spectacle that finally put the world on notice that some element of the Jews was united in the war against the Third Reich. Unquote. In Amsterdam, the following resolution was adopted, and I quote, whereas unanimous outcry, protests, and demonstrations of Jews and non-Jews throughout the civilized world against the incredibly inhumane policy toward the Jews in Germany have been unavailing. Whereas the Hitler government has repeatedly expressed its determination to annihilate them economically, to deprive them of their citizenship, and eventually exterminate them, now, therefore, be it resolved that boycotting of German goods, products, and shipping is the only effective weapon for world Jewry and humanity by way of defense and protection of Jewish rights, property, and dignity in Germany. We earnestly urge all of the men and women of the civilized world, irrespective of race or creed, to support and join in this movement against brutal fanaticism and bigotry, and to help lead it to a victorious conclusion and until the last traces of barbarous persecutions have been eliminated, unquote. May I remind you that Hitler never publicly mentioned the word Jew for the first 6 months. This is all before he even mentioned the word. Be right back in 3 minutes.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Don't answer it! How stop these annoying collection calls.
Imagine being free from your debt without settling and with no payment plans, no negotiating or filing bankruptcy, and no attorneys. What if you could eliminate the risk from all your unsecured debt in about 90 days and keep all your money? You can. It's called Zero Debt Guarantee, and it works. There's no other program of its kind on the planet, and we guarantee the results in writing. Call now, 800-477-9256. Let our team of experts provide you with the resources to fight back, stop collection calls, and prevent and stop wage garnishments and bank levies. If you're facing foreclosure, we can help. Don't go it alone. Get free information now by calling 800-477-9256. Talk to an expert who has also completed our program. Call 800-477-9256 for free info or go to ZeroDebtGuarantee.com. That's 800-477-9256 or go to ZeroDebtGuarantee.com.
Hey there, my name is Frank Bates. What I'm about to tell you in the next 60 seconds could get me in a lot of trouble. I just created a free video presentation at 123crooks.com that exposes the electricity monopolies and government agencies for what they really are: incompetent, lying crooks that are counting on your ignorance and fear to keep your power bills criminally high. Some have called this a conspiracy. Others have called it a cover-up. And you'll be shocked to find out how deep the conspiracy goes. My video at 123crooks.com exposes the truth and shows you the secret of how I beat them and how you can beat them too. Watch the controversial video that thousands of other smart patriots have already seen in the last 3 months. Go to 123crooks.com and discover one weird trick to slash your power bill and protect your home. Go watch my video now at 123crooks.com before they force me to shut it down. 123crooks.com.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
And I am sharing some selections from the Transfer Agreement and the Boycott Fever, 1933, by Udo Valendi. This booklet is available from the Barnes Review. Their website is barnesreview.org. No the before, just barnesreview.org, and it costs $7. Okay, from Edwin Black continues, the Declaration of War officially proclaimed the soldiers of Israel broke up into three businesslike commissions, working with great speed. The conferences unanimously established a new world organization they had promised named. The boycott organizations were the first in every country. Named the World Jewish Economic Federation. It would be headquartered in London with Lord Melchett as its honorary chairman, and Untermeyer as its president. But this personal initiative on the part of Lord Melchett and Samuel Untermeyer was thought of as a palace revolution by the traditional Jewish organizations such as the Anglo-Jewish Association, the Dutch Jewish Committee, and considered non-representative. Stephen Wise, as well as Nahum Goldman, both of them, being concerned with the organization of the World Jewish Congress, had obviously also personal reasons for taking the coordinated boycott into their own hands, thus discrediting Untermeyer. Their demands were identical in principle, as can be seen from the language adopted at the later World Jewish Congress. There it would be reported in 1936, and I quote, "The boycott organizations were the first in every country to call attention to Germany's plans for economic conquest and military aggression. So this is where all these myths come from, okay? They wanted public opinion against Germany's huge rearmament policy. They alerted it to Germany's economic domination of the weaker southeastern European regions and of certain Latin American countries, which might lead to their political domination by the Third Reich. They pointed out that the dishonest trade methods employed by Germany, of course, all of this is a bunch of myths, okay, At the same time, they carried on an unremitting campaign to enlighten the public through all kinds of mediums about the German atrocities, the persecution of the church, the destruction of the labor organizations, the degradation of women, and the regimentation of education. These people were just without mercy. Okay, we read on. If one reads elsewhere in Black's book that the leading personalities of the World Jewish Congress understood the political and situation from 1919 to 1939 not as peace but as an armistice, then the verbiage created in this fighting atmosphere, interspersed with so many untrue allegations, becomes understandable. It may be noted that the period of the Weimar Republic is likewise included in this armistice terminology. With no difference made from the years 1933 to 1939, this terminology would find its more precise expression later on in a letter written by Winston Churchill to Joseph Stalin on February 22, 1944, in which he called World War II a 30-year war against German aggression beginning in 1914. This is just amazing, amazing stuff. In spite of the long-lasting personal quarrels between Stephen Wise, Nahum Goldman, Chaim Weizmann, as top representatives of their organizations on one hand, and Samuel Untermeyer as ad hoc boycott organizer on the other hand, the boycott had become a fact. It had brought about considerable isolation of Germany and extraordinary losses for the German export trade at a time when the world economic crises caused more than 6 million jobless in Germany, and when Germany could not even begin to keep pace with the additional reparations payments. Without mentioning any figures in this connection, let me just quote an exchange of letters between Dresden Bank and the French bank Societe Generale, dated July 1933, which characterizes the general situation and which is prefaced by Edwin Black as follows, and I quote, "Desperate directors of Germany's prestigious Dresden Bank hope to call upon the international banking fraternity for help. In a dramatic written appeal sent in mid-July to a major French bank, the Societe Generale, a Dresden Bank frantically declared, 'The atrocity propaganda, harmful to German trade, is based on lies and distortions of facts. Complete tranquility reigns in Germany, and any non-party person on the spot can convince himself that no one is hindered in the lawful pursuit of his private and professional affairs. We would be glad if, in the interest of international trade relations, you would spread the truth and do your utmost to bring about a speedy end of the boycott of German goods.' The highly unusual plea provoked an equally unusual response from Societe Generale, which had for decades enjoyed cordial professional relations with Dresden Bank. Societe Generale response, which ultimately reached the world's newspapers, answered that, 'On opening our mail, we found an amazing circular from your esteemed bank. We beg to draw your attention to the fact that a French business would never presume to send propaganda material in business correspondence. We are thus compelled to assume that the tactlessness of your letter arises from an inborn lack of taste. And for the systematic persecution of Jews by your government, we know what to believe. We know doctors have been driven from hospitals, lawyers struck off, and shops closed down. Every nation is a master of its own home, and so it is not our business to interfere. Nevertheless, we are free to turn our business sympathies to our friends and not to a nation which claims is destroying destroying individual liberty. We assure you, gentlemen, that we will continue to esteem your bank, but we cannot extend sympathy to Germany in general, for we cannot hide our belief that the National Socialist Party will extend its lust for power to other countries at the first opportunity. You ask us to pass on this circular. Rest assured, we will do so, and our answer with it. Unquote. In late July 1933. Now, keep in mind, the Germans had done nothing, had absolutely done nothing. The only thing that the Germans had done was to create a safe environment for Jews to live and build, just as was indicated in the first part of these readings. In late July 1933, Reichsbank representatives approached London bankers for an embarrassingly small loan of 40 million Reichsmarks, slightly more than 3 million pounds sterling. This case caused a round of derisive laughter in the London financial community. And, of course, we know who runs the London financial community. Investors Review reported in its August 5, 1933 issue, we have seen a letter written by a financial broker in Berlin that throws a lurid light on the dreadful condition to which Hitlerism has reduced Germany. The writer states that he has been asked by the German Reichsbank itself to negotiate for it a loan of 40 to 50 million marks, that the Reichsbank, formerly perhaps the greatest financial institution on the continent, should have come begging to London for a paltry sum is alarming. So it is not surprising to hear that authoritative opinion is that Hitler will come to a sanguinary end before the new year. And remember, this was 1933. London refused. The U.S. also. Germany could not count on any financial aid from abroad. On August 6, Samuel Untermeyer returned from Amsterdam to New York and greeted his compatriots in a continent-wide radio broadcast, which was immediately arranged for him. And he said, and I quote, "I deeply appreciate your enthusiastic greeting on my arrival today, which I quite understand is addressed not to me personally, but to the holy war in the cause of humanity in which we are embarked." With the nation listening, Untermeyer explained how the whole world had already made surprising and gratifying progress in the economic war against Nazism. "Each of you, Jew and Gentile alike, who has not already enlisted in the sacred war, should do so now. It is not sufficient that you buy no goods made in Germany. You must refuse to deal with any merchant or shopkeeper who sells any German-made goods or who patronizes German ships. To our shame, there are a few Jews among us, but fortunately only a few, so wanting in dignity and self-respect that they travel on German ships, where they are despised. Their name should be heralded far and wide. They are traitors to our race," unquote. At about the same time, the 18th Zionist Congress convened in Prague from August 21st to September 4th, 1933. Over 10,000 delegates and visitors attended. The Zionist organization constituted a government without country, subdivided into territorial federations from each country, into religious and other associations, political parties, and fractional groups. The League of Nations had granted a quasi-governmental status. Every Jew who paid an amount of money equal to a token biblical shekel, about 25 cents, could vote. The MIPI, the Labor Party, headed by David Ben-Gurion, which represented roughly 44% of the delegates, was considered a moderate branch of Jewry, turned out to be the strongest faction. It nevertheless had to stand hard disputes with the irreconcilably radical revisionists headed by Vladimir Jabotinsky, who was then in Poland, who did not shrink away from political murder of his own people. The assassination of Chaim Arlo Sorov, who I spoke about before, a member of the Jewish Agency Executive Committee and one of the most respected Zionists by members of the said radical revisionists, which occurred north of Haifa shortly before the conference on June 16, 1933, particularly accentuated the conflicts at this conference. Arlo Sorov had pleaded for negotiations with Germany to enable the immigration of German Jews and the transfer of German assets to Palestine. In a moving speech, Jabotinsky insisted that all energies be expended to force the Congress to join the boycott movement. Nothing less than a merciless fight would be acceptable, cried Jabotinsky. The present Congress is duty-bound to put the Jewish problem in Germany before the entire world. We are conducting a war with murderers. We must destroy, destroy, destroy them. Not only with a boycott, but politically, supporting all existing forces against them to isolate Germany from the civilized world. Unquote. While Jabotinsky urged his followers to postpone their personal differences in favor of a war against Nazism, David Ben-Gurion demanded that his supporters do the opposite. He proposed giving the revisionists the choice of pledging allegiance to the MIPI, the controlled organizations with their moderate aims of leaving the Congress. A MIPI, controlled presidium finally did prevail. Their spokesman, Nahum Sokolow, had visibly great problems finding the correct words to describe the sentiments of the delegates. He said, and I quote, "It is not our task to influence or criticize the internal developments of the German people, which have bravely suffered through the war and its consequences. We are not gathered here to criticize any one nation or any one state. It is not part of the program of the Zionist organization to break its shepherd's staff over this or that government, state organization, this or that economic system. Our duty is to speak the truth," unquote. But he did not forget to focus on the words of Supreme Court Justice Louis Brandeis, in that he repeated, also without concrete details, what really happened in Germany. And I quote, "The Jews will never forget and will never forgive Germany's insult," unquote. What Jabotinsky was not allowed to say in the conference hall, he postulated during a press conference outside, and he said, 100,000 members of the revisionist movement will exploit all possibilities around the world to carry out the boycott of Germany. He said, "We sympathize with our German brethren, but Hitlerism is a danger to the 16 million Jews all over the world, and the German Jews cannot influence us not to fight our enemy. The enemy must be destroyed." Although he had not, unquote, although he had been excluded from the Zionist Congress, his words were nevertheless propagated by the world press, a factor which certainly did not contribute to the peaceful solution of the problems on hand. Notwithstanding the fact that during the 18th Zionist Congress, the word boycott was avoided, yes, even forbidden, the columns of the world press were filled with a new subject, the Second World Jewish Conference in Geneva, which commenced on September 5, 1933, immediately following the 18th Zionist Congress. Here, the exact opposite was true. And I quote, "Anyone who dared rationalize trading with the enemy was a traitor, and all boycott traitors were to be exposed," unquote. And that is the way they work. They are unified. When it comes right down to it, the Jews unify together, and they do what they're told. 100 delegates in Geneva, coming from 24 countries and led by Stephen Wise, president of the American Jewish Congress, were determined to create a worldwide boycott organization, but this resolution was on a collision course with the Zionist movement. The new callousness generated in the belligerent atmosphere of the Second World Jewish Congress can best be described by the words of the two leading personalities. Nahum Goldman said, and I quote, "Therefore, the first task of the conference," urged Goldman, "was to create the organization needed to conduct a bitter, well-planned war against Nazi Germany." Now, this is, all of this occurred in the first 6-7 months after Hitler was made chancellor. He wasn't even in charge of the government. My word. My word, my word. And, of course, this is a continuation of World War I, because the Brits, the Britsies, as our friend Veronica likes to refer to them as, the Britsies really opposed any kind of entrepreneurship. They were afraid of the German competition. They were afraid of Germany's work ethic. They were afraid of the Germans in principle, because the Brits had learned to work off of the labor of others. Okay, Stephen Wise, who pointed out with reference to the boycott resolution and from E. Black's book, and I quote, "When the Jewish boycott of German goods and wares is to be ended depends not upon the Jewish people but upon the Nazi government. This instrumentality of moral and economic pressure Jews have been compelled reluctantly to adopt and utilize, but they will not lay this down until such time as the great wrong inflicted upon the German Jews is undone and the German Jews once again be placed in the status and position which were rightly their own before the accession of the Hitler government," unquote. They basically wanted to dominate politics, the media, the law, the schools, medicine, everything in Germany. Be right back after 3 minutes.
How would you like to own land? A refuge to escape from big cities, possible food shortages, the collapse of the dollar, or just a vacation trip is now available to you. Lots of fishing and hunting are available just across the Rio Grande River. Own your personal Colorado Wilderness RV lot within 3 stones' throw of the Rio Grande River for $1,395. Quarter-acre lots, county road access. All lots come with warranty deed. All just for $1,395. Call 785-672-3141. 785-672-3141. Or go online to ColoradoRiverLots.com for more information and to see photos. It is away from civilization, a good business investment, and a low-cost protection plan. Call today, 785-672-3141.
In an emergency situation, would you drink contaminated water? You could if you had the amazing Life Straw from MyPatriotSupply.com. Life Straw is the most advanced personal water filter available today. It filters contaminated water from almost any source. Life Straw is lightweight and compact, perfect for hiking, camping, or in an emergency like a flood. Life Straw is easy to clean, comes with a 1-year warranty, and has been used worldwide since 2005. Get the amazing Life Straw personal water filter at MyPatriotSupply.com. Plus, check out Survival Sea Vault, 20 seed varieties for only $37.95, Tattler canning lids, long-term storable foods as low as $69.95, and much more at MyPatriotSupply.com. Enjoy stress-free shipping on all orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927 or visit MyPatriotSupply.com. That's 866-229-0927, MyPatriotSupply.com, for emergency preparedness, self-reliance, and food independence.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Welcome back. This is Deanna, and I have been sharing some selections from The Transfer Agreement and The Boycott Fever, 1933, by Udo Valendi. This booklet is available from the Barnes Review for $7. The Barnes Review website is barnesreview.org. And what Stephen Wise was suggesting, that they totally destroyed the Hitler government, this amounted to nothing less than that Stephen Wise's followers, without a mandate by German Jewry, brazenly demanded that Germany in principle should forget about her right of self-determination in favor of these foreign spokesmen representing world Jewry, that the 1919 status of surrender with virtual civil war situation and economic chaos attained by 1932, he declared a trailblazing legal status in Germany for the years to come, an impossible and irresponsible attitude in terms of world politics. Stephen Wise simply regarded the prevailing situation as a state of war. He looked upon the Jews as being in the first trenches of the front. At the second preparative conference in Geneva in early September 1933, he stated, and I quote, "Once again, the Jewish people is called upon to suffer. For we are the suffering servants of humanity. We are called upon to suffer that humanity and civilization may survive and may endure. We have suffered before. We are the eternal suffering servants of God, of that world history which is world judgment. We do not rebel against the tragic role which we must play if only the nations of the earth may achieve some gain, may profit as a result of our sufferings, may realize in time the enormity of the danger they face in that common enemy of mankind, which has no other aim than to conquer and destroy. We are ready, if only the precious and the beautiful things of life may survive. That is once again the mission of the Jews. We stand on the front lines, in the front row of the trenches." Unquote. Stephen Wise did not present any concrete details concerning his wild accusations against the German government. At least nothing of this kind has been published. There is, however, a striking similarity between this situation and the manner in which the question of war guilt is generally dealt with. Using all available technical and economic means of power, the other side's responsibility for the outbreak of war is simply classified as well-established historical fact recognized by the whole world. Well, that is because the whole world's press said that. And all the people, well, most of the majority of the world now believe it because, well, they read it in the newspaper. And we all know that if you read something in the newspaper, then it must be true. Or if you read something on the internet, then it must be true, right? Conclusive details are deliberately ignored, and there is general pretense that everything has been proven a long time ago and that no further evidence is required. The general ignorance and dependence on the broad masses are recklessly exploited while all kinds of accusations are made. The more rhetoric and crass, the better. Naturally, these accusations are always clothed in words aimed at benefiting mankind and in fighting slogans advocating the complete destruction of the vicious people branded in this manner, thus avoiding all unnecessary debates, critical analysis, and objections. Well, thanks for joining me today, and perhaps we'll share some more of these later on in the week. Anyway, have a great evening, and again, thanks for being with me today, and we'll talk with you tomorrow. Bye-bye.